we have Joe Oldham and Willem Dafoe.
Wonderful. Thanks for doing this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Willem, thank you so much for being here.
It's my pleasure. Thank you. Thank you. Do you like it?
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
We got dressed up for you as well.
I like what you've done. I like it. Who's, oh, I know who that is. You know, bow down to Zod.
Exactly.
Bow down to Zod.
Neil to Zod.
Bow down to Zod. Bow down to Zod.
I have no idea what that is.
Oh yeah, it's Superman.
It's the first one.
Exactly. Yeah, where they finally go away in the plate and the plate glass. You know, and Jor-El is Brando. You know. Do you know the movie game? I love the movie game where you name a movie and then you go actor movie actor movie. So if we say that's Superman, then we go, let's say, Margot Kidder, or we say Marlon Brando, and then we have to name another Marlon Brando movie. It goes like that.
I love that game.
Which is a nice conversation starter. If we said Marlon Brando, we'd go to, I was watching a bit
on
of One-Eyed Jacks. On the Waterfront is awful nice. One-Eyed Jacks.
Carl Malden, yeah.
Patton.
I was just reading
an interview about Wes, who said, I've been inspired by, there are a couple of my movies where I have scenes like On the Waterfront, where he's finally confessing to Edie, yeah, I had something to do with your thing on that pile, and you can't hear the dialogue because it's obscured by some sound, background noise. He's done that in a couple of movies also, where it's important information, you know, or like in North by Northwest, where he's finally telling him the whole story on the air, on the tarmac as he's laying out, and you can't hear the whole, he's catching him up on the whole, the events of the play, you know.
I think the last time you guys were together was Life Aquatic. Is that true?
We did something since
Adam Resurrected.
Paul Schrader.
That came here to Berlin. Were we both in Berlin here for that?
We were.
Yeah.
But we announced it. I'm not sure to show it.
Really?
The last film you guys did together was Life Aquatic.
Life Aquatic,
yeah.
And then we did a Paul Schrader movie called Adam Resurrected, which is... Yoram Canuck, yeah?
Yes.
Who's no longer with us.
Last year.
But it was a very popular Israeli novel.
I remember that. I was going to ask you, I remember you guys talking a lot about your experience at the West back then, and had raves and stuff like that. And there's another movie of his played completely different characters, different roles. You have some scenes together, some very classic scenes together. Was this experience a very different experience? Was it something which... kind of like, almost like 10 years hadn't passed since the last one, or?
Similar. It's the Wes Anderson experience, which is a lovely, delightful, uncommonly beautiful, you know, art communal project and sweet experience, yeah.
One of the big differences, at least from my perspective, was in Life Aquatic, I remember that sometimes we'd get there and he would sort of find the shot. In the respect that there was a big ensemble and there were also some characters, me being one, that he really didn't, there weren't that many scenes, but he wanted to fold because it was this community of people. If you remember that movie, there was this group.
All right.
So
yeah.
Some of those scenes weren't so scripted or weren't so figured out, and he'd fold people in, you know? And some of the long takes, you know, where he really choreographed it with the people there, kind of saying, "Oh, and you go over there, and you go," and then start
like they do in most
it.
Movies. Like, what is you more common? I mean, that's more common. I mean, that's what a lot of people do.
He kind of made some of the shots in the place for this, and we both were talking, and we probably attributed to the fact that he did this animation, Fantastic Mr. Fox. He loved that kind of preparation. Because with animation, of course, you have to know how you're going to do the animation, and you have to really have it worked out. So for this, before I even shot, he showed me this animatronic, a line drawing where he did all the voices. It was fantastic.
It's as good as the movie.
I thought, boy, this is sad. He doesn't need actors. He's a one-man band. This is so beautiful. Wow. It's a beautiful version of the movie. It's a beautiful version, and it was clear and beautiful and witty and gorgeous and fantastic. But a line drawing with him doing all the voices. I guess what I'm pointing to is, for this, partly because of that Fantastic Mr. Fox experience. I think he liked, you know, designing the shots more completely. And it made it really efficient. And I think also, you know, I don't know, it less chance to get hung up in the shooting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would you like or you don't like? I mean, it's...
Oh, I loved it. I loved it because it was so clear. And, you know, some people can imagine that, oh, that's deadening, it's done. In fact, some actors didn't want to see the animatronic. Right. They said, oh, I can't listen to you doing my lines, or I can't watch, you know, your idea of how he should gesture. I like it. I see it. I'm clear with it. And then I have to bring myself to it. You know, that's basically what performing is, you know, a series of actions and applying yourself, right? And that's the pleasure.
Because it's such a structured movie, it actually feels like the performances really outside of Rafe, who has all that room, are very, it's like he's very in a kind of narrow thing, and then he hired actors who he knew could pop in, you know, 30 seconds or 10 seconds, and that was it.
Absolutely. And that's the other beautiful thing, and he's designing these things with actors in mind, with specific actors mm-hmm. in mind.
Yeah, but I liked it too. I liked, Stanislavski supposedly gave line readings. When some of these actors or directors go, oh, don't you, line readings, it's a very foreboding thing. So supposedly, Stanislavski would say, here's a, I always like to hear somebody figuring I can make it my own somehow. And it was great to hear, because he's got a very particular musical, he's very musical, literally musical, but dialogue too, very musical. So to hear the whole, you know, pace of the thing and was very, and how he wrote lines, you know, what he intended was very good. They sent it to us on our computers. You know, you could watch the scenes on your computer.
we'll never see it, though. We'll never see it.
I'll bet on the DVD. I don't know, but I'll bet on the DVD.
We'll
you should.
It's beautiful.
They might show it to you. Yeah.
But, you know, it was also a good way to just say, this is what we're doing. This is what we're doing. This is what I see. Let's do it. And, you know, you say, make it my own. I don't give a shit about making it my own. I care about doing it. Because it naturally happens, you know?
Yeah, but you're not going to lose some unique thing that you can bring to it by imitating, by being an imitator of Wes or something. That's some people, I talk to students and they go, oh, I don't want to see somebody else's version of the da-da-da because I'm afraid. I go, okay, but, you know, and if you're somebody who's uncontrollably a mimic and loses your own kind of creative direction, maybe so, but I think it's more a cliche and a magic carpet for laziness. See the professional, see the movie to Glengarry Glen Ross, see what these people are doing, and then, you know, you might use some of those ideas, you might throw them out, but, you know, get in the ballpark, you know. This was like that, and this was had cuts in it, you know, too, so you knew what was happening. But he's very meticulous, but still, and I think he admires Robert Altman and kind of a... He's a kind of an existential master about how you're going to do it. There's something very free.
Is there something about all of you living together in that town that also is that Altman?
That's Altman. Yep. Reminded me of Altman. Yeah. Very. Come on, let's do it together. We had dinners every night. Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, Jeff. Both this film and Le Weekend, which I recently saw, requires a lot of like lovely vocal dexterity from you. And Bill was in here, and he was making a lot of noises, and he was talking about like using your voice as an instrument and stuff like
Bill
that.
Bill was?
Yeah, he made quite a few interesting
love
noises
to have heard,
when he was in here.
Heard that? Really? But, was he fooling around, or was he? Did he?
Because
he's just
a lot of grunting.
Because he's a musical artist also. Yeah,
but
he was.
I'm wondering about like preparation for these kind of like a lot of like vocal requirements. Are you doing any kind of like vocal preparation before you're getting into these scenes with this kind of fast speech?
I do. I bothered him. We lived on the same floor of this hotel that we all took over, and I'm obsessive. I sing all day long, every day, whenever I'm not working. I have a piano. I got a piano in my room because I play piano and I sing. But it's part of my continued study. I'm a late bloomer and nothing if not a humble student of elements of craft and instrument talent-y, you know. And I like, you know, I just did a stage thing. He's stage eighth degree black belt, stage master, stage actor. I'm a humble student of it. I just did something very demanding. I like to keep working on things. So I won't bore you with what, but I keep working on things and get to use it in movies to one extent or another. I'm not sure what you even mean, but yeah, to me it's very interesting.
I'm curious about what you did with your face and with that weird jutting jaw. Was that something that you just added in, or was there
a little bit? You know, Wes said at one point, as we said over and over again, he's got very specific design ideas, and he said, you know, let's add. I want you to have some sharp teeth, and I said, okay. You know, and then I thought, oh, it's like a vampire, and he's all dressed in black, and I'm so done with vampires. I said, really, Wes, do you really want this? You know, and he said, yeah. And I said, then, I'm taking credit for this. then I said, what if we did him like this, like a bulldog? And of course, for me, that was a better way to go. So, you know, that it's just naturally, if you've got these artificial teeth, you know, and you can just see them barely, but, you know, the mouth is always kind of open, and it has that kind of, you know, just...
makes him scarier.
Yeah, like a bulldog.
Was it a similar...
Bite who? You know,
Was it a similar process with Klaus on the Life Aquatic? Was it finding... You know, his look and his voice.
Klaus, it was different because Klaus wasn't quite formed. And actually, one thing interesting about Life Aquatic is another actor was going to play that role. And then he decided to work on another movie. So Wes called me, like, at the last moment. So I think it was originally designed with someone else who was physically much different than me. And... So we made it up as we went along.
Yeah. If you feel like out of the furnace, you also kind of came in late. Is that very common for you to get called late and kind of be able to jump into something like that? Or?
It depends, you know, because if it's a smaller film and I'm like kind of more headlining, then it's early because, you know, you've got to find the money and you right. attach yourself early. But for like these, you know, more supporting character roles, yeah, sometimes late in the game. Because now more and more movies come together very late. It used to be you would know what you're doing 6 months ahead, but financing is such that, you know, studios don't make movies anymore. Where the money comes from is always someplace else, people that aren't in the movie business. And because of that, they're very late getting financed. And, you know, so stuff gets cast, you know, sometimes a month before.
Yeah. Isn't that so difficult for preparation? And
it depends on what the role is, yeah.
For Klaus, for example, is that intimidating or is that freeing? For Klaus, because that must be so different, because you're saying that Wes is so meticulous now, and back then that character wasn't formed. Is that intimidating or is it freeing?
That he's more articulate and more further...
No, that back then when...
Oh, no, that they both were good. They're both good. They're just two different ways, but... You know, I don't want to overstress that. I just felt like in this, he was like, to see that animatronic blew my mind. I thought, this is, send everybody home. You got a movie here. I really felt like that.
Well, have you had a chance to see either version of the Von Trier?
I haven't. And a link so I could watch it, but I didn't want to watch it on my computer, and also I'm working on something, and sometimes when you work on something you don't want to watch movies. And then finally when I got a break and I thought I want to watch this, like I had nice 4 hours, it expired.
We know that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know that feeling. Since we have you both here, I think we should bring up the scene with the cat.
Yes.
Is that one of those scenes where, like, it's so, I mean, it's so deadpan, obviously, with the Wes Anderson film. Is that one of those scenes that once he yells, cut, you crack up? Or anything you want to say about that scene?
Yeah. The only thing I remember is there was some question I said, because we wanted to use a real cat. And I was happy to try that because I figure a cat, I'm not going to throw him and he'll land on his feet.
kind of did.
But I did. But he was very angry at me and just ripped the hell out of my
nose. Oh, really?
Yeah. So once that happened once, if you watch the movie closely, I've got what is a very bad doll.
Is it really?
And most of the time I'm doing like that. There's like maybe three shots, and one is definitely a very bad doll. And if you look close, it's very unusual for Wes to allow something like
that. Oh, really?
That.
I'll be interested to see this movie and be able to, because it goes by so quickly, and every frame is filled with stuff that I'll enjoy going, stop, because, you know, I remember catching animals are difficult, and, you know, I feel bad. I don't know that any animals should have to be made to be in show business at all, and if they don't want to, and this one was wrangled, and, you know, this is not like, and I spent time with the cat, because they didn't know exactly, everything was planned out, but they didn't know that I might have another moment or two with the cat that wasn't planned. And I turned out to do, so I had a period of courtship with this cat and its owner and wrangler. And so every day I would spend some time, talk to it, become friends with it. It takes more than that. I tried to spend as much time as I could, but finally, the only thing that I did with it was when I enter my first entrance in the car, I come out with the cat and hand it to Ray. That was all we could manage, and that was not so comfortable. I was like, sorry. You know, I was doing whatever I could, but we were not pals, and it was not happy about me. We did that while not trying to bust the illusion that this was not my love cat, you know, because that's the idea. But it's tough, and I feel bad for the kitty cats.
Should either of you plan about your coworkers, but that cat was.
Well,
I wanted to wring its neck.
I'm allergic. Did you guys have a shot together in that sequence?
You are?
Yeah.
Huh?
Did you guys have a shot together in that entire sequence? That whole cat, did you know what the other one was doing?
Well, we're there, you know, we did it all together in the same spot, but I don't know if we're ever on camera together. It's the da-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga. But no, everybody does their off camera. Happily, you know, in this, so.
Do either of you have pets? Not to linger on this too long.
No, I don't, and I never have because I travel too much.
Okay.
I have a dog. Yeah, well, I got a nice doggy just recently, a standard poodle, red-haired standard poodle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm curious about the way, I asked this to Bill, and I'm going to ask you guys, how the process you get ready for a role has possibly changed over the last few years, or as your career has gone on. Do you find that do you spend the same amount of time breaking down a script? Have you streamlined your process? If you could talk a little bit about that.
It's a very interesting question. I'm interested in, you never know what other actors do. I love to hear what he does because he works in different things. I'll be interested to see what he says here. Me, I do case by case basis. You know, if there's no time to do anything, I figure however much time I got the part, that's how much time I'm supposed to be working on it. And I start doing things if I have the time. But I'm just as happy if I go, hey, I didn't have any time. Good. Let me see. Let's go. You know, da da da. So it depends on that. And then the other is a big question that it's boring inside baseball stuff, but I like to have sparring partners, especially on movies, especially in theater things, but I like to get students or other surrogates who will go through the other parts with me. And I work on it, like with other people. There are things you can do on your own, and depending on the part, you learn things and research things, work on things. But I like to go through things and learn it like that, and learn it with other people there. So I do a bunch of that. I did on this and other things too.
Can I ask you guys what you do?
Just real quick, you know, it is all, I don't know from over the years how it's changed, but it's, you know, sometimes you really feel the need to do a lot of research and sometimes you feel the need to do very little. And it mostly has to do with your confidence and your comfort zone and where your imagination is. You know, sometimes, literally, and I'm not putting this in a better or worse or a hierarchical thing. Sometimes you get a great costume, you get a great look, and it does something to your imagination. You know what has to be done. Don't overwork it, don't overthink it, do it. Sometimes you don't know what it is and you really have to do a lot of things to have you say, oh, I am this guy. So it really depends. Something like this, not so much research, to tell you the truth. It's really about, you know, inhabiting something that's very well designed and knowing what your function is. But like right now, I'm playing Pasolini, and I could be studying him for a lifetime. You know, in terms of reading what he read, you know, interviewing people that are still around, many, many different things. So it really varies.
Do you like variety the way that Jeff does? I mean, do you like to change it up and do different, get in different situations where one you don't have a lot of
time? I think that happens naturally.
Yeah. Doesn't happen.
It happens naturally, and you do like that because you don't want to ever be in a situation. You know, you always want to trick yourself into thinking, you know, it's the first time.
Are there films, for both of you, are there films of yours that you've done that you are surprised have found this kind of, like, life over the course of after having it been released? Or maybe the reverse, things that you thought maybe would have taken off and did not?
Happens all the time.
Or maybe specific examples you want to give, or...
You know, I always remember something like To Live and Die in L.A., which is a very old movie, but that was a huge failure when it came out. Huge failure in the respect that it didn't really play. And critically, it was lambasted. Basically, and I think it's interesting, you know, historically, because they basically said, this movie is flawed because there's not a character to identify with. Everybody's a scumbag. And this was like years before Tarantino, and you know, kind of a kind of different language of you know, characters. But that was a movie that, with time, you know, found real people that really loved it, particularly in the film community. And when I was a young actor, that was kind of a calling card for me. And, you know, people really responded to that movie. And with time, it's kind of become a classic for some people. You know, and then, of course, there's all these movies that you think are going to do well and you really like, and the timing is just wrong, and, you know, or it gets sold the wrong way, or it depends what else is out there at the time. You know, there's no such thing as a good or bad movie. You even see it country by country. Some places really perform well because of cultural orientation, and other places they just don't work. So it's always a head scratcher. I think if we knew, I'd, you know, be a studio executive.
Any example you? I'm sorry. Is there an example you can give that maybe?
That was wildly surprising. Not really. People come up to me, but I've done these couple of things that seems to have, you know, fervent devotion amongst a group of people. You know, Buckaroo Banzai and this movie Deep Cover. You know, different things that people go, mm-hmm. oh, yeah. I like this movie or something like that. Yeah.
Wes screened, a bunch of movies in advance for everybody, like classic films. I wanted to know if you guys could talk about those and maybe the ones that you liked or the ones that helped inform what you guys did, maybe in the same way as the animatronic, like you watch these films, like, you know, that sort of thing.
I like those. I had not seen many of those. I'd never seen To Be or Not to Be, the Jack Benny one. Loved seeing that. And, you know, one could imagine where Wes was coming from and da-da-da. I'd never seen Grand Hotel. Shame on me. And loved seeing that. I had never seen, Paul Schrader recommended for our movie. And then for this, I saw it again, The Silence, the Bergman movie. That I enjoyed seeing a second time.
Did Wes say anything ahead of?
Oh, he loves to talk about movies. He's a great. He put him on. Yeah, we talked about things. I think, you know, that Mortal Storm. Did you see Mortal Storm? Boy, that was good. That's about the guy's, you know, the conscience about, you know, fascism and standing up at the, you know, right moment and da-da-da-da, and the difficulty of heroism in those circumstances had something to do with this movie, you know.
Well, did you have, was there one that you watched that maybe helped inform, or that you liked at least?
He said it, and I, you know, I watched a bunch of them. He never really formally screened them. There was like a library that was one of the rooms in the hotel.
Yeah, we had DVD players in
our room. When you had time off, you'd just watch movies. It just gave us kind of an idea of the world.
He had books, too. Books on hotels
but
and design
not
things.
Really,
you know,
because it's really a world apart. But it just kind of reminds you of some of the things that he's kind of referencing and he's playing with. in the movie, it's actually quite different. So right. It's just fun.
Did he help you prepare in other ways, besides the animatronic, besides, I mean, the work individual? What's it like?
He tells me,
preparing?
You better know how to drive that 1938 BMW. Can you imagine that?
In the snow?
It worked beautiful. In the snow.
What was it like?
Slippery.
Jeff,
cold.
Jeff,
oh, that's, yeah. The craziest thing about movies is when they're so fucking cold, but you don't see it. It's like, oh.
Bill was talking about that too, about doing the scenes.
So cold.
He was talking about how he had to do his voice so that you couldn't see the smoke, you couldn't see his breath.
Or even move his mouth. Speaking of vocal dexterity, he said as take by take, it would be harder and harder to get the lines out.
So,
when you're cold, it's hard to talk after a while.
I've been that cold, yeah, that's tough.
What impressions did you guys have of the film when you finally saw the finished version as far as the unspoken, the undercurrents, the aroma of it. What was your feelings about it? I mean, we all read the story, but, you know.
One of the things that I like about Wes's movies, and they kind of hover, and then they land. And I think by the last, the surprising thing is how kind of moving the last part was, and these kind of expressions about, you know, oh, that world. It's a beautiful thing. I get moved when I hear him say, oh, that world that he was living was already gone, but he was sure putting up a good, you know, good show.
Yeah, marvelous.
I mean,
grace.
That's about the movies, you know.
So
this is about dying movies. This is about dying, you know, and some people hanging on and carrying on, you know. Kind of romantic attachment to, you know, a certain way of thinking. I found that really moving, and that's when a movie works for me, because it's fun getting there, and then that's kind of the thing that lands and makes it stick, right. Makes all the fun stick, makes it not just good jokes and kind of wise guy stuff and beautiful gags and funny beards and all that stuff. It really lands and becomes about something.
Yeah, I was knocked out by it. Yeah, I just adore it. I think it really works like... it's a knockout, and yeah, I find those very, very moving. When she starts her poetry about their relationship, two brothers, that's a very beautiful thing. And yeah, he says that glimmer of civility in a world of brutality, you know. Well, that's Wes too. You know, that's what he's making and devoting his life to and offering. You know, here's something lovely. Here's something that I can do that's beautiful. You know, in a world of coarseness and
productivity and fast is good.
It's a very beautiful, very beautiful thing.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm with my details. I was going to ask you. Your suit.
Margiela. I like it because